My guest is Kyla Bennett. She's a New England director of PEER. She's a former EPA employee, and she's going to talk with us on the Trump administration attacks on the EPA. So welcome, Kyla Bennett, to Trump Watch.
Thank you so much for having me. PEER is Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, and basically what we are is a whistleblower protection group. So we support and defend public employees who work at the local, state, or federal level who are working in the environmental arena. So we support and defend public employees who work at the local, state, or federal level who are working in the environmental arena. And although we're known as a whistleblower group and we protect people who are whistleblowers and try to let them keep their jobs, we also try to make sure that people don't get to that point. In other words, once you become a whistleblower, you kind of lose your power within the agency. So what we do is we act as kind of like an alt or a rogue agency for these people. We get out information for them, and we try to keep their identity hidden.
I see. And let's begin. So that's a lot to talk about right there. And so I set up a few questions, but I want this to be wide ranging. And one of the, I guess we're going to start with one of the most recent events that happened, which has left me scratching my head and a bit perplexed. And that is the this something I've never heard of before: the Board of Scientific Counselors, which are five members who were basically told by the new EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt that they would not be reappointed. And Pruitt is said to believe, quote, "We should have people on this board who understand the impact of regulations on the regulated community." So what is the role of BOSC, and what effect would Pruitt's decision have on the EPA?
Basically, what the board does is it's a bunch of academic scientists. So scientists who are not lobbyists. They don't work for the chemical companies. They don't work for Monsanto. They don't work for the dairy industry or anything like that. They're academic scientists who basically inform EPA's policy with the scientific research that they do. So to have industry people on that board pretty much defeats the purpose of the board entirely. And it's not only shocking, but it's scary to think that we would allow industry people who have not only money in the issues, but that they have an agenda. Most academic scientists are doing science for the sake of science because they want to know the truth. They want to know what really is going on. But a lot of the industry scientists are doing what their bosses tell them to do.
So an industry scientist who's supposed to be following regulations to protect our environment might actually fudge their science to fit the profit needs of the company rather than the safety needs of the community.
Sure. I think a lot of industry science is tainted, and that, you know, you can see that over the years back when we were told as a country that cigarette smoking was healthy and not a problem, that asbestos was safe, that lead paint was okay, that milk is healthy. Now they're finding out that milk, dairy, you know, dairy products aren't healthy for you. The food pyramid. You know, when people have a vested interest, when they have money at stake, when they're getting paid by a big billion-dollar corporation to say something, it gets said. When that's put into policy and into laws, it creates a problem for the citizens of this country.
What kind of problem? Well, there's a safety problem with cigarettes. Obviously, that people were told cigarettes were okay to smoke. They had advertising that showed doctors, smoking cigarettes on the golf course and telling people, have a cigarette. It's good. It'll loosen the phlegm in your chest, you know, and clear your throat and things like that. We know that happened. But I always think of that as in the past, in the 40s, the 30s, you know, in a different era. Do we have those kind of problems still to this day?
Absolutely. Look at things like the pesticides that are killing the bees, where there are academic scientists doing work that show that there are connections between these massive bee colony deaths and certain pesticides. And yet when the industries that make these pesticides do their studies, they say, look, no problem. Mm-hmm. So you get it all the time. You, people who spray mosquito, the mosquito misting people who are selling those misters out there, those personal misters that you can put in your backyard, and they say safe for pets and children. And when you go to look at the studies, they're not safe for pets and children. They're absolutely not safe for pets and children. There are suspected carcinogens in those things. But so when you get these people who have a lot of money at stake making decisions and making the quote unquote science, you have a conflict of interest.
I see. Do you have any idea who's going to be replaced? Has he made any statements as to who is going to replace these five members?
They've said industry people, but recently they tried to appoint a chemical industry advocate to a senior political position at EPA. So a bunch of people got together and wrote a letter to Administrator Pruitt. The woman's name is Dr. Nancy Beck, and she's a policy advocate for the American Chemistry Council. And the Trump administration wants to put her in charge of the Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention at EPA. Well, if she is a policy advocate for the American Chemistry Councils, how often do you think she's going to have EPA say that certain chemicals are problematic? It's definitely a conflict.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like having Betsy DeVos, who's an advocate, a total advocate of charter schools, as a Secretary of Education, which is supposed to defend public schools.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Right. Or, you know, Pruitt, who doesn't believe in climate change, in charge of the EPA.
Right.
I mean, it's if it weren't so scary, it would be laughable.
Pruitt is the former governor, I believe, of Oklahoma, one of the top oil-producing states, and a person who says there's no such thing as global warming.
Right, and certainly you can see the conflict there as well. And the way that Trump and his administration have been attacking the EPA it's been multifaceted. It's been through trying to slash the budget, through hiring people like Scott Pruitt, through making website changes, taking information down on climate change, internal memos to the staff saying things like, you know, you better be careful what you say, doing buyouts to try to reduce the force,
right,
and then making regulatory and policy changes. So they're attacking the agency in so many different ways, so many different avenues, that it's hard to keep up.
That's good. That's a lot to talk about, and I have some questions along the lines of some of the things you've been saying. I guess the next is, how has the Trump administration affected the free speech of EPA employees, and what have EPA employees done to resist those attacks?
Well, what happened is that back in February, EPA employees received a memo. It went agency-wide, basically saying, hey, you guys, you know, as government employees, you have to be careful what you say. And it was a very strangely worded memo saying that if people are going to be talking about environmental issues, they should not put any undue emphasis on the fact that they work for EPA. It was very vague, very scary, and people aren't sure what they can and cannot say. Now, of course, you know, every citizen of this country has a First Amendment right to free speech. But when you work for a government, it gets a little tricky, because although employees are allowed to speak about things that are of public concern, so political or social importance, that has to be weighed against what the government interest is in maintaining efficient operations. And so a government can say, hey, we don't want you talking about this. So I used to work at EPA, and when I would get up at a town meeting, for example, and talk out against something, I would often say, I work for EPA, but I'm talking in my individual capacity. And just by doing that disclaimer, I felt pretty safe. These days, the employees don't feel safe doing that because of this memo that went out in February. So they feel like they're being gagged.
Can water cooler grousing within the office by people lead to firing?
Absolutely, because what has happened now is President Trump has already submitted his papers, his intention to run again in 2020. And so because he's a candidate, the Hatch Act comes into play, and you really can't be campaigning, quote unquote. So even grousing at the water cooler or sending an email or a text to a friend saying, you know, can you believe that Trump did this? I'm sure as hell not going to vote for him in 2020. That could be considered campaigning and can get you in trouble. And the other thing is that even though, you know, there are certain things that have been done, the rumors that are going around, the things that these people have heard, they've heard that they are searching their emails. They're afraid to print things out. They're afraid to go on certain websites. They're afraid to work from home because when you work from home, you have public records on your home computer or on your smartphone.
Emails.
And they're afraid that the government will then be able to search those computers or phones. So it's a very, very gray area these days with the technology that we have. And the employees are really, really frightened. However, as you mentioned, they are resisting. They are not just curling up into a ball and saying, you know, it's over. They are resisting in many, many ways, and I have to give them a lot of credit for it.
You answered the question I was going to ask next, which are EPA workers living in fear at this moment?
They are living in fear. A lot of them are living in fear. Some of them are taking early retirement. You know, they wouldn't have retired if Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders had won, for example, but given that they know what's coming down the pike, they are retiring now. Others are quitting, and others are just so afraid once they're at work. When I'm talking to some of my clients, they refuse to text me on their personal phone. We have to use an app that actually scrambles and encrypts what they say to me. That's how afraid they are.
Oh, I see. Tell us a little bit more about what PEER does, your organization, because I'm fascinated. So how do you support? This is Kyla Bennett, by the way, who's the New England director of PEER. And you can tell us what that means again. I'm sorry, it slips my mind. But what does PEER actually physically do to help people at places like the EPA when they have these kind of problems you've been discussing?
Well, PEER stands for Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. So public employees are all government employees and people who work in the environmental arena. So what we're doing for them now and what we've always done, but we're extremely busy now with the Trump administration in charge, is that people contact us when their agency is not following the law or when they're told not to follow the law or if they uncover something that they think should see the light of day, which is being hidden by the agency. EPA in particular has always been very, very susceptible to politics, unfortunately. And, you know, when I worked there, I worked under both Republican and Democratic administrations, and it was pretty much the same under both. But this is what we're seeing now is unprecedented.
I see.
And they are afraid when they come across something that they're afraid is going to disappear. For example, I've had many EPA employees call me and say, hey, I have these scientific documents. They're on our website. Can you please download them and keep them because we're afraid they're going to get deleted? And they don't want to lose the information. Also, if they see something, like if there's an enforcement case, for example, that the Trump administration is softening, in other words, they're saying, oh, you don't have to pay $1 million fine and restore that. Just give us, you know, $10,000 and we'll let it slide. We write comments. We provide the letterhead, if you will. And the employee can write comments for us on that project, so we have the information that would otherwise not be seen in the light of day.
I see. So you're collecting this information so that the public knows about it and it's not totally silenced. But you have to say that despite your organization, it's very possible that lots of information is being lost because of this and things are going
Absolutely. On. We're afraid that information is getting lost, and the employees have been really good about trying to save things. The other issue is that EPA relies pretty heavily on academic scientists, so outside the government scientists at universities and colleges and independent scientists. So that information is safe with them as well. But the other thing that we do is sometimes if an employee refuses, for example, to break the law, I was a whistleblower at EPA, which is how I ended up working for PEER, actually. I called PEER. We filed a suit against the agency because I was told to break the law. I refused to do it, and they took me off the case that I was working on. So that happens, too, and that's another role that we fulfill is we actually will sue and protect these whistleblowers under the Whistleblower Protection Act and other acts. For example, the Clean Water Act has a whistleblower protection provision in it. A lot of the environmental laws do right now.
How do they get around those protections? If there is protections written into these laws, how come they're not being protected, the workers?
Because, unfortunately, the laws are not as great as they could be, number one. And number two, the agency will often find other things. For example, you know, if you're a whistleblower about a substantive issue about, let's say, toxic stuff getting into a river, if you're blowing the whistle on that, they'll say, you know what, your time card was an hour short. We're going to fire you for that. So they try to go after you for things, or, you know, you took a pencil home, or, you know, you drove three extra miles on the government-owned vehicle. You know, they try to go after you for reasons other than what you're blowing the whistle on. And then it's very, very hard to prove that they're firing you because of your disclosure.
Right. And of course, you don't, Pierre does not directly handle Hanford, but of course, we know that Hanford Watch, which is an organization that helps, we were just, I don't know if you were listening, but before you got on, we were discussing the incident that just recently occurred at Hanford. And
right, the tunnel collapse, yeah.
Right, and the collapse of the tunnel, and how Tom Carpenter and his team at Hanford Watch have been supporting people in this exact situation, highly senior workers and engineers who've come forward to tell about unsafe activities at Hanford, dangerous activities at Hanford, who were then put in basement offices, followed at home, and all
right.
these horrible things done to them to force them to quit.
Right. They do all sorts of things. So short of firing them, so it's really difficult to prove. Like one botanist, I remember, from one of the federal agencies had found some rare plants in an area that was going to be up for a timber sale, and she found these rare plants, and so they only let her go out into the field in the dead of winter. You know, so it's hard to say they didn't fire her, and they didn't stop her from doing her job. They just put her in a position where she couldn't accomplish what she needed to accomplish. Hanford is really frightening. My husband was a downwinder, by the way, so I know a little
that.
Bit about it, but
yeah.
You know, that we've got a really direct impact on human health, and
just
a lot of the issues that EPA deals with do have a direct impact on human health.
Just to remind folks, a downwinder was were people who lived downwind of Hanford and were subjected to exposed to mostly radioactive iodine and other elements in the atmosphere that were released during Hanford's operations that you know, the government says no, but we all know that we're connected to increased levels of thyroid cancer and other cancers.
Right, and my husband's thyroid doesn't work, and we assume that's why. But he got kicked off the case as a plaintiff because he flew too much. You know, you have to answer all these questionnaires, and he ended up that he had flown so much that they said, well, the radiation could have come from that, and maybe that's why you don't have a thyroid. You know, so it's really hard to go against the government. They have a lot of resources and a lot of power. On the other hand, you have to keep in mind that there are so, and you alluded to this when you talked about the people at Hanford who are fighting against what's happening there. There are so many people, so many government employees who work at these agencies. They're not doing it for the money, and they're not doing it for the glory. They're doing it because they care. They're trying to protect the environment. They're trying to protect the citizens of this country. It's not easy being a whistleblower. It's, in fact, you become a pariah. And yet these people stay there and work in sometimes awful conditions in order to get the truth out. So they're truly heroes.
I see. Right. And of course, we could add folks like Chelsea Manning and Mr. Snowden and others who've done took tremendous risks, personal risks, went to prison, faced prison or even worse, you know, for telling us things we probably should know, you know.
Exactly.
Although the government doesn't want us to. So, OK, great. This is a very interesting conversation, Kyla Bennett. And I wanted to know a little bit. Let's continue on in some of your work because I'm fascinated in hearing. Oh, I have another question I wanted to throw in there. It just came up. I was just actually a friend of mine who lives by the Gowanus Canal asked me about this, not specifically about that, unless you know something about it, but about Superfund sites. Are they going to defund Superfund sites? Do you know anything about that? What's happening with that?
You know, we don't know what's going to happen. Of course, the Trump administration was going for about a third cut of the EPA budget, and that would be just incredibly difficult for the agency to continue even doing the most basic things with a 30% cut. So we don't know precisely what would get cut. Would Superfund get cut? Maybe. You know, it seems like what they're saying is we want the states and the municipalities to deal with this. But guess what? States and municipalities don't have the money. They don't have the resources. They don't have the people. And sometimes they don't have the knowledge to deal with things like Superfund sites. I mean, some of these Superfund sites are pretty nasty. And if you took away federal money and defunded that and left it to the states and the municipalities, we'd be in big trouble.
Mm-hmm. And very interesting. And I'll tell you, we're broadcasting from a studio just really a few blocks from the Gowanus Canal, so I can almost smell the disease-ridden waters over there that have not been cleaned up, and there seems to be no money now available to clean them up. So let's talk about social media. I was fascinated by these I was checking that out before I came here to the studio, all these alt national park, alt EPA, yep, alt websites and Twitter handles. What's going on with that? And is that been getting the information out in some way or another? Who's behind these things?
It's really helping quite a bit, actually. And it all started with a national park tweet that came out about, you know, when Trump started, you know, saying that climate change was a hoax and, you know, taking down web pages. The National Park Service tweeted out, at least an employee there tweeted out something about climate change. It got taken down. They had to issue an apology. But then people got the idea, hey, you know, we may not be able to do this on the government sites, but let's make these rogue sites and get the real information out there. And so it's popped up in all the agencies. It's been great. Fish and Wildlife Service, EPA, National Park Service, NASA, all these rogue sites have come up, and they actually are getting more traffic than the government sites were getting. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we are in an age with this whole social media thing where it's hard to hide. It's hard to quash people and to shut us up, because we have so many methods of getting the message out there, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat or these, you know, these rogue accounts. I think it's fabulous. I'm loving it. And some of them are really funny, and other ones are just getting the information out there that's being taken down off the regular government sites.
Right. Even just a few days ago, it was sort of lost in all the Comey stuff and all the things that were coming out recently, but there was a recent pull down of information from the EPA website. People went to the other website, and a lot of stuff was just gone.
Yeah, that was the climate change stuff that they're taking down. They're saying we're revising it to reflect the thoughts of this administration. Yeah, right. We know what the thoughts are of this administration, that climate change isn't real. You know, so it's kind of sad when you have the new president of France coming on air and saying, you scientists who are working on climate change, come to France. We'll take you. We'll help you. We'll give you money. We respect you. We want your research. I mean, how sad is that? That we're in a time where your own country doesn't respect the work that you do. I don't understand this anti-science, anti-intellectual thing, but these federal agencies that work on environmental issues are getting the brunt of it.
I see. Because what you just said about a little earlier about we know what Trump's opinion is basically about climate change, that it doesn't exist, it's not really happening. And talk a little bit about the difference between opinion and science. Is science just somebody's good idea? I mean, when people use the word theory, they often think a theory is just an idea, when they really mean a hypothesis is an idea. But a theory is much more than an idea. And what scientists say, which is fact-based, is a lot more than an opinion.
Right, exactly. A scientific theory is not the common use, what people usually think of the word theory. A scientific theory is something that's been proven over and over and over again. So, you know, it's the theory of gravity, but if you put an apple in your hand and drop it, it's not going to float or go up. It's going to go down, because the theory of gravity is something that is very, very true, like the theory of evolution. And climate change is something, it's indisputable. It's happening. It's here. 97% of climate scientists or more agree that it's happening and it's man-made and it's dangerous. And to have somebody replace that with an opinion, you know, an opinion is, I don't like bananas, or I like the color blue better than I like the color red. Those are opinions. climate change, the fact that it exists, that's not an opinion. It's not something that can be debated. Science isn't the Easter Bunny. You don't get to decide whether you believe in it or not. You know, it's there. Science is. And I really, that's one of my pet peeves when politicians say, I believe in science. Science isn't something for you to believe in or not. Science is. Science is facts. Now, they evolve because we learn more as we get better techniques, as we do more experimentation, as brilliant people come up with new theories and test them. But science is not something that you get to dismiss. It's just, it's mind-boggling to me that people in power, like President Trump or Scott Pruitt, can say, I'm going to dismiss this because I don't believe in it. That's not the way it works.
Right. As a scientist, as a person who works very closely with scientist Kyla Bennett, what are your analysis of what you read when Donald Trump sends these tweets about issues having to do with science? And what do you think of his educational attainment as far as these subjects are? Do you think he's faking it, or he really doesn't know?
I don't think Donald Trump is very bright. Personally, I do not think he's a very bright man. And I think, you know, he does flip-flop a lot if you look at his stance on all sorts of things, like, you know, pro-choice, pro-life, everything. He flip-flops all over the place. It's kind of like he only cares which way the wind is blowing. And he, you know, he used to be a Democrat. He used to give money to the Clintons. I don't think he cares about anything but himself and money. And he thinks, and a lot of people think, that economic progress and environmental protection are mutually exclusive. And they're not. Mm-hmm. They're really not. So I don't think Donald Trump is bright. I don't think he understands the science. I mean, he was just telling an economist that he invented the phrase prime the pump. He didn't invent that phrase. You know, he's not well educated. And for him to be able to make decisions about something as dangerous and critical as climate change is scary.
Right. We have two more minutes, Kyla, and I just wanted to use that time to feel out what you think are important things we should be looking at in the coming weeks with Donald Trump, the federal government, and the EPA. What do you think is next in the?
Well, I think, you know, what the big piece of the puzzle that's missing right now, even though Trump has appointed Scott Pruitt is the head of the agency. None of the regional administrators, there are 10 EPA regions around the country in different geographic locations. None of those regional administrators have been appointed, and none of the heads of water or air or the, you know, the high up people in Washington DC have been appointed either. And that's what we have to be careful about. We have to stay on our toes, and we have to gather the information when he starts proposing these people, because I have a feeling they're going to be just as bad, if not worse, than Scott Pruitt. And I think, you know, the thing that really helps the EPA employees and the other federal agencies, if they know that there are people out there like you, people in the public who care about what they're doing and who appreciate the fact that they're trying to protect the environment and trying to protect our lives, that helps them immensely. So just being able to get that support from the general public is so very important.
Right. Kyla Bennett from Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, PEER. Could you give us any information as far as websites or how people can contact your organization to learn more?
Absolutely. Our website is really simple. It's www.peer.org, peer.org. And if you go on there, we have all our news releases. We have a contact form. We have a donate button. We have everything and all the different offices that we have. I'm in New England. We have a D.C. office. We have one out in California. You can get all sorts of information about the campaigns that we're looking at and how you can help.
Thank you very much, Kyla Bennett, for joining us on Trump Watch.
Thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate it. All right. And this has been Trump Watch. I'm Paul.